that's a happy reading. Oh, please, yeah, have a seat. That's super happy, especially when, can we just own the fact? Like to start this, two facts we gotta own. One is that I don't care whenever you hear a story. This is why story is so powerful or so dangerous. Whenever we hear a story, our natural mind finds ourselves in the story. Right? It's something I don't care what you do. Watch the kids, show them a kung fu movie, and then come back 5 minutes later. I guarantee they found themselves in the narrative, and they're gonna have sticks that are now samurai swords, and one will have a welt on their face. There's only one way to find this out, so when you pick up your kids today, right? When you heard that story, the parable that Jesus told, where did you immediately identify? The fact is, if you didn't immediately identify with somebody, you just weren't listening. I mean, and we can own that. We're all at that place at different times. See, the reality, so that's reality one we got to juggle. Reality two, if we just go on natural stuff, regardless of your socioeconomic status based on northeastern Indiana, you're the rich dude. When we look at the world economy, the very fact that even our homeless in America would be considered rich worldwide, which makes that parable tough to swallow, doesn't it? See, there's this rich man and be careful. Hear me out. Don't walk out because we got to be so careful. This text is so tough to preach because it rubs us the wrong way or we can hear the wrong take. I've heard this preached that to have wealth in and of itself is what sends Lazarus the rich man to hell. That is not the right reading of this text. Okay, so we can just throw that. There is nothing inherently wrong with having financial gain. We don't have to sit here and shame ourselves that because we were born in America and we have it better off than everybody else, that somehow that makes us more sinful than them. Now, there may be all kinds of other reasons that I'm more sinful than them, but that's confession and absolution, not a sermon. Okay, how do we deal with that reality? We pause and we unpack this love text that we've been working through. So here's the deal. If you have your Bibles, open them up to 1 Corinthians 13. If you don't, you can look it up on your phone. And mine, just so you know, mine's on airplane mode, so if you try to text me in the middle of it, I won't get it till the end of the sermon. You know who you are. And the jokes are funny, by the way. I do laugh later. Okay, so we're there, 1 Corinthians 13. Here's how we have it up here. It says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Who has that translation, by the way? Does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Anybody got a different one? Nobody? Okay, then we're all reading. See, this is the way I find out what people are really reading. We're all reading in the NIV then. Here's the way it's translated a couple other places. In the King James Version, it's really interesting. King James says, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. The ESV, that's the English standard, says, does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. What I love about the NIV is it catches the difference in Greek between these two words. It's not rejoice and rejoice. There's one word, the first way, does not delight. Usually in the Bible is translated rejoice. When I was in Greek class, we learned rejoice, rejoice, and again I say rejoice, the little Sunday school song. And it was that word. But what the ESV is getting at is there is a difference between rejoicing in something that has to do with me and rejoicing with something that has to do with another. See, when I win the game, there's a certain amount of rejoicing. When I get the promotion, there's a certain amount of rejoicing. When I book the speaking gig that I've been looking for a long time, there's a level of rejoicing. You guys have all experienced that. But what this text is getting at is it goes, love comes over here. And there's this different kind of rejoicing. This kind of rejoicing that, if we're honest, we've got to learn, because in our sinful nature, it rubs us all the wrong way. But when we're honest, when you get that promotion, when you win the game, I can rejoice with you, but there's this part of me that's dark. There's this part of me that goes, now that you got it, yeah, I'm happy for you, but I'm also bitter. And I'm also jealous. And I also go to this place where I'm questioning, man, you got that thing, and I didn't even want it before you got it, but now that you got it, I want it. See, that's the juxtaposition that's set up here. Doesn't rejoice in evil, but celebrates with others when they get that thing. See, sometimes I'm frustrated because I got to preach for 22 minutes, and that part I haven't mastered yet, so I kind of feel bad moving on. Has anybody in here mastered that part? Because I can hand you the mic. Can we live in that? We gotta, when we do the confession and absolution part in church, we gotta own a couple things. One, we are already forgiven for that error. God's already set us free from that. Not because we've mastered it, not because we've worked hard enough, but because of Christ on the cross. See, that's done, finish line. If you never master it, if you never move on beyond that point, God still loves you perfectly. But what I'm learning is that as we step into it, we experience this whole different thing. I was talking to a friend of mine who also speaks at some events, and she happened to book the LCMS National Youth Gathering. And I said, man, I'm so happy for you. And I must have said it multiple times, as if I was trying to convince myself that I was happy, because I got called on it. Are you really happy for me, or are you patronizing me, was the exact line. And for the first time in my life, I was brutally honest. I said, honestly, I'm jealous. I don't see why you got the thing that I really wanted. And then I turned the knife and I said, you're not even LCMS enough. Which is a lot coming from me. Can I just tell you the freedom in admitting that and going, man, I don't have to hold that in my gut anymore. What's confession look like in your life? What's it look like to step into that freedom this week? See, what it looks like is what love looks like. That love doesn't delight only when I get the thing, but when the other gets the thing too. And I'm convinced that the first part of that is confession. But we got the other part of the text now, right? That's just that first word, delight versus rejoice. We got this whole other thing that's going on there, but I want to give you a second. I'm learning how to do this. In the Psalms, it's called a Selah. And it works better with music, but it's that point where you pause and you chew on it. I'm going to warn you. We're going to start doing this as a church in the sermons. It's going to be weird. Some of you aren't going to like it because we don't do it in our culture at all. But in the last 10 minutes, some stuff was said. If any of it hits you, just pause for a second and digest it. We're going to stretch those out as time goes on. And no, if any of you know about the Quakers, we're not going that way. That's how they start their service, by the way. It's just silence until somebody's processing something and they stand up and give the sermon. We're not going there, so you don't have to be scared. If nothing hits you, then we can go ahead and move on. If something hits you, just wrestle with this. That other part, though, is that injustice word. We gotta deal with the rich man. The injustice, it's translated as evil there, which is just wrong. I don't know anywhere else where it's iniquity is how the King James translated it. Doesn't delight in iniquity. Doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing. The word is injustice. And it's particular that we gotta own the rich man and Lazarus story. The problem with the rich man and Lazarus is really simple. The rich man is given a set of resources, a set of gifts, a set of things that he is good at. Obviously, it wasn't a win-the-lotto rich man because those don't really exist. If you look at it, most of your people that hit the jackpot lotto are worse off financially than they were, or I'm sorry, 3 years after they hit the lotto are worse off financially than when they hit it. See, when we're talking rich man, what it means is it's somebody who's taken, who has been blessed uniquely with a set of resources, and then takes those and invests them in a certain way. The problem with this story is not the fact that he's rich. It's the fact that he does this on the backs of somebody else. He has these resources that God has blessed him with, which he is supposed to, and this is a theme through all of Scripture. I am not getting political here in any way, shape, or form. This is not the government making you do this. This is how God designed the world that people should do individually because it's part of justice. Is that when God blesses Henry, I'm supposed to take those and invest those and grow those and bless others with it. What often happens is I have those gifts and those talents and those things given to me, and instead of growing them and blessing others with them, I grow them on the backs of others. Right? This started in junior high. On the playground. You don't have to be the biggest guy on the playground to be picked for the kickball team. You just have to insult the littlest guy enough so that you're not picked last. See, we learn this. Kids learn this. By the way, this is a totally new thing that we've dealt with on the playground in 2016. The kids are not learning about how David dealt with his brothers. How when the prophet came to pick who's the, I mean, that was sarcasm. When the prophet came to pick who's going to be the next king, he looked at all David's brothers and his dad paraded out the biggest and the strongest first. And then the second biggest, the second oldest, the second strongest first. And David was ruddy and out in the field being a shepherd because his dad went, he didn't even make the cut. We can leave him out there. Nobody would pick him as a king. See, what the kids are going to walk away with is that God doesn't look at our physical appearance. God looks at our heart. See, we, those of you in this room that are Christians, because I know some of us aren't. That's not an insult. I know people visit here and they're like, huh, what's this Jesus thing? I'm interested. But those of you that are, your job is to take those resources and to overflow them to the world. See, what Lazarus did is he looked at, I'm sorry, what the rich man did is he looked at Lazarus and he was there to serve him. He ignored him. He walked by him. He stepped over him. He didn't even see him. And even there, when there's a great schism in heaven between the two, check out the rich man's heart. What does he say? He says, hey, Lazarus, come serve me. I mean, it's more eloquent because it's in the Bible. He says, please send Lazarus down. He doesn't even ask Lazarus to do the job. He asks the guy in charge of Lazarus to do the job. Send Lazarus down. Tell him to dip his finger in the water and come cool my tongue, because he is still my servant. I am still greater than him. I will still build my well-being on his back. I will delight in evil, because Lazarus, he's a scum. He's not a scum. He's not existent. He's there to serve me, and I'm there to oppress him. See, he never says that, right? Some of you are going to go, hold on, Pastor, he never says that, and neither do I. When I treat the person who's there to help me like garbage, I never say it, but it's in my heart. How do we learn to go, these are resources.